you have been interested in France and French culture since since you were a young man. Is it Rimbaud? Is that the main?
Yeah, it was Rimbaud. I vividly remember that particular day. Even that particular summer, I'd been listening to. I mean, you couldn't help but hear Bob Dylan. It was, if you turn the radio on, you were hearing Bob Dylan
or the Beatles. Speaking of Nobel Prize winning literature,
right? Yeah, isn't that amazing?
I never imagined that
I would ever see that. But anyway, the Beatles, Bob Dylan, the Animals, the British Invasion, that was what you heard on AM radio back then. Right about the time I started hearing Like a Rolling Stone with its wild, phantasmagoric imagery, I wanted to repeat that. I thought, that's fabulous. I want to immerse myself in that. That's fantastic. And I couldn't find anything. So I had a professor at San Jose City College named Richard Christian. And he became very friendly. He was, I think, in his 40s at the time, but he had a very youthful aspect, a very youthful sensibility, and he became friends with his students. And we actually went to his house, a friend of mine, David Plasecki. He and I went to his house one afternoon to talk about literature, listen to Howl, Ginsberg read Howl, and drink wine, and just relax and enjoy the afternoon. And I asked Richard, is there anybody that writes like Bob Dylan? Are there any poets that write like him? And he got up and he went to another room and he came back with this huge Norton anthology and he opened it to The Drunken Boat by Arthur Rimbaud. It was a translation in English. And I read that and I thought, that's it. That's what I'm looking for. That wild, delirious, phantasmagoric imagery, that's what I was looking for. And there it was with Rimbaud. So I went from Rimbaud to all the other French writers. And why, I can't answer it. I don't know what it is, but there's just something about the bulk of literature at the end of the 19th and early 20th century mainly seemed to be occurring in France. There was way more of that kind of writing in France than there was, say, in any of the other West European countries.
It's almost as if modernism started there.
It almost seems that way, or at least the more surrealist tendencies emerged in France. And you began with the Prince of Dada, which actually comes from Romania because Tristan Tzara was Romanian, but he had moved to Paris and so was living in Paris. And so first there was Dada, and that morphed into surrealism. So he had all these. He had the school of authors working around surrealism. And that was his birthplace. I don't know what role French-speaking or being in France or Paris even what that had to do with it. But that's geographically that's where it seemed to center.
Mm-hmm. And Paris serves as an antidepressant for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'm much more relaxed in Paris. We haven't had occasion to go much further than Paris in the last several times we've been there because we were just there for a few days. But just being in France, I just feel more relaxed there. I think one of the reasons why is I see the things that I value are in more evidence there. Bookstores, for instance. The bookstores are just fabulous in France. They continue to have all these they represent more obscure, eccentric titles, which our bookstores have stopped doing that. Roberta had put it beautifully once when she said that the bookstores here in the United States are starting to resemble the kind of bookstores you find at airports. You find a big stack of 50 Shades of Grey and a big stack of whatever the last novel Dan Brown or Michael Chabon had written. The mainstream, the big-selling mainstream titles, that's about all you find. You don't find more obscure, more oddball, more eccentric...
Like you.
Authors. Yeah, well, yeah, thanks. Like me, for instance. Yeah, exactly. Off in the margins. Out in the weeds.
Yeah.
So you find that in France. When you go to a bookstore in France, you find amazing titles there. And there's just... Just the city alone, you find a lot more of the kind of idiosyncrasy used to find in Seattle, which is now, there are a few places left, like Pike Place Market, where you can find that general kind of visible eccentricity.
That's very interesting, because Pike Place Market, as I understand it, is the 18th most popular tourist attraction in the world.
That's amazing.
I know.
I had no idea.
And you're talking about, it's an expression, I've heard it described as the soul of Seattle, mm-hmm. the Pike Place Market. So you're talking about idiosyncrasy, you're talking about originality, you're talking about a lack of chain stores, because you can't have a chain store in the market unless the chain started there, as in the case
right,
of Starbucks.
Right.
So it would seem to me that if we allow for idiosyncratic thought and expressions, we have the potential to create things like the market. And yet we right. don't.
Right.
The easy way is to just have a stack of 50 Shades of Grey or whatever contemporary popular horseshit.
Exactly.
There
is. There's been this very steady homogenization of everything. And it's very distressing. It's just, it robs us of the richness of life and the kind of creativity I was talking about earlier, where we all live as creatively as we can. It's become increasingly difficult to do that because life has become increasingly regimented, which is one of the things poetry is up against. Poetry is a kind of energy that invites, encourages, inspires diversity. That is the very nature of poetry, to inspire diversity, idiosyncrasy. Poetry thrives on diversity. So if you're in a city like Seattle that becomes heavily technocratic and highly affluent, there's a homogenizing influence there. Things get sterilized, turns into chrome and steel and offices and expensive parking.